Welcome to the Truth to Power Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm your host, VGR Nathan. And with us today is co-host Jessica Doe Mehta. Dr. Jessica Doe Mehta, welcome.
Hello.
Welcome, welcome. How are you doing today? It's getting a little warmer in New York after a few snow, but doing pretty well.
Yeah, all good. I don't know. Yesterday was freezing. So I'm
Oh, yeah?
hopeful for today. I walked to Times Square. Do my Broadway shows, and yeah, it was cold, but
Yeah, at least the sun's coming out. I feel like that makes me feel enthusiastic for the coming season. But our special guest is Mary Beth Timothy, who is a native Oklahoman, pursuing a dream of creating art and working towards making it accessible to all walks of life. She is enrolled Cherokee Nation and works as a full-time artist, illustrator, business owner. Welcome, Mary Beth.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's really exciting to talk to visual artists, multimedia artists. You've been featured, you feature mainly, according to your bio, mainly wildlife. We can talk a little bit about that as well as your inspirations and the archetypal understandings you have from your heritage. So why don't we go a little bit in your personal, narrative, your bio kind of a thing, where you were born and a little bit about your heritage and lineage.
Okay. First, I want to say, don't be jealous, but it's supposed to be 83 here today.
Oh, nice, nice.
That is not February weather by any means. I think it's just teasing us, then it's going to get cold again. But yeah, so Mary Beth Timothy, I was born in Prior Creek, Oklahoma, northeastern Oklahoma. Have moved around quite a bit in my life and wasn't really around our native people until I came back to Green Country as an adult and started my art career when I was probably in my early 30s. I've drawn, colored, painted, all of that, you know, as far back as I can remember. But as for career-wise, then it started in my 30s. And I love being able to create anything that like tells a story. And I love especially when I can tie in our heritage and culture with that story. And so not all of my pieces have it, but there's quite a few that may have like the ancient mound symbology in the background or something to do with, like, I have a Southeast warrior that people ask me about, you know, the timeline and what tribe and all of this. So just a lot of different subjects, I guess. And I use a lot of different mediums. I usually settle on either graphite or acrylics or Prismacolor watercolor pencil.
Yeah, it's interesting when you talk about drawing from many different symbols and imagery, but what do you find you resonate with most? Is there any particular niche area? What is the most living in your heart, like at least right now, maybe right now as opposed to all the time, but is there any particular symbol or archetypal image that you feel like returns?
I do a lot. I have a great affinity for birds and especially our native birds around here. I've always been drawn to them. My dad and my grandpa were avid bird watchers. My grandpa even wrote a book about it. He lived in upstate New York, so he got to see a lot of them coming through during migration. But yeah, definitely the birds and the wildlife. I recently illustrated a Cherokee book, and it was all animals and plants, and it was amazing. It was a great experience. I got to do a lot of research. I had to do a lot of research for it, so I learned quite a bit, and it's actually sparked another interest with me. To where I've been taking some medicinal herb classes, medicinal plants. I've been in the talks with the tribal Alliance for Pollinators, I think is what they're called. So they've been out to the house planting different pollinators and just trying to learn as much as I can about that. And so now that's another interest for me is drawing and painting our native plants and flowers.
The Earth Dwellers book.
Yes, Cherokee Earth
Yes.
Dwellers.
Yeah, Mary Beth and I are from not only the same tribe, which is Unyanwia or Cherokee, but the same band. So what most people call Cherokees, there's three bands. And Cherokee Earth Dwellers, yeah, it was an amazing book. The
Yes.
and I think it's got to do research, or that's just like the research like nerd in me, but I think got to. But yeah, your illustrations were amazing. The book was
Thank
amazing.
you. Thank you. And that was one of those things that I don't think, well, I know I didn't realize how important that project was until I was deep into it, you know? And then by the time I finished it, I was like, wow. This is an important book for our people. It's a very important, so it's going to be around a long time. And I was fortunate enough to be a part of that. So, you know, that's very satisfying to me, and it's humbling to me that I was a part of it. So,
Is
yeah.
there a favorite like story or legend that you learned more about when researching it?
I actually learned a lot of different, like our legends or folklore, stories that I wasn't familiar with. So, you know, of course, we've got the one that we all of the Cherokee know, you know, about spider bringing fire, and that's all. That's my go-to, my favorite one. But yeah, it's I can't pin down a particular one that was my favorite. But I liked the Tenaw and the eagle when they were fighting in the sky. Of course, that's one that I got to illustrate. And actually, I illustrated a lot more than that because it was a funny thing. Usually, when you illustrate a book, you work with the publisher and the art director. And in this one, the author was the middleman. So that was very different for me. And he was telling me everything he wanted in the book. And so I was doing all these illustrations. And then when it got passed on to the publisher, they were like, well, you know, we can't put all these in it. So we have to pick and choose. And they ended up only using two of the folklore stories. And Chris wasn't real happy because he wanted so bad to put in, you know, all of them. So, and I know Loretta did too. Loretta wanted everything illustrated. So of course, you know, we can't do that either. But yeah, it was something. It was great.
Essentially, I was looking through your website, moonhawkart.com. People can check out. And under collaborations, there was some cloth fabric and throw blankets that featured the bison, which is something that many people in the general public, you know, feel connected to. You know, they feel like it's very indicative of this kind of era and this kind of a certain era or a certain. But can you tell a little bit about that collaboration and how does the bison figure into new insights we can bring into, you know, the buffalo bison or the bison symbol?
Okay, so that piece actually was more or less a commission piece, or and it was an idea of a gallery owner that we work with, and she was doing an installation, an art installation in some new buildings for the Indian Health Center in Oklahoma City. And she had this vision of what she thought would look so great at the entrance, you know, and she shared that vision with me and I just ran with it. So what it is, it's native bison art from the earliest native bison art, like cave etches and drawings to ledger art to flat or Bacon style to contemporary abstract and then to more realism. So it's all through time and then, you know, to now. So, but I did it in to where they're like a herd, but they're transitioning over. So the name of the piece is called Transition. And so there's some in the contemporary abstract that have, like, there's one with the Osage design, and there's one with the Seminole patchwork design. There's one with the Southeast mound symbols and some woodlands floral beadwork designs. And I think that's all the tribal ones. But yeah, I tried to put a little bit of a lot of things in it. But it ended up, so they took that image and I licensed it to them, and they created like two wall wraps. So I think one's like, I can't remember, like 18 feet long, and the other one's like 20 or 25 feet long, something like that. It's huge. And then I had the original at an art show in Oklahoma City at First Americans Museum, and the lady from Teton Trade Cloth, Leslie Durden, came over and started asking me questions about it. And she said, "I can see that image on so many things," and asked if I would be interested in licensing it for like fabric and things like that. So once I got home and we contacted each other again, so I licensed it over. And now, I mean, it's just that piece has just been a lot of different things. So they've created several colors of fabric with it, and aprons and accessory bags and things like that. And then I also have taken pieces of it, individual pieces out, and created cuff bracelets and, you know, different things like that. So, and tiles. So it's been on a lot of things. It's taken me a long ways.
I know, so the Mohawk butterfly is featured in that particular section as well.
Yes.
And what is the significance of that to your lineage?
So, Kamama or the butterfly, actually it's a monarch, and I don't know the Cherokee word for that. But it's just some, I don't know. All the Cherokee stories and the Cherokee words that have to do with nature and are beautiful, I'm just drawn to. And I might not know the significance of it to our particular tribe. I know a lot of natives have different symbolic, you know, meanings for it. But yeah, I just love it. And I've been trying to think of different patterns where I can use, you know, our different elements to license with them so that we can have more Southeastern natives connected.
Something that I just want to mention that I just think is interesting is, like Mary Beth said, the Cherokee, or our language, it's Saligi, word for butterfly is Kamama, and the word for elephant is the same because the ears look like butterfly wings.
Yeah.
Well, that's so interesting. You know, when it comes to language and how they might be resonant
Right.
and overlap, it's so fascinating. Yeah. And how much would you say of your art are you drawing from folktale legends? And how much is it like, where do you come into your journey, your kind of individuation process? How do you find, yourself thinking? I mean, you've kind of hinted at this. So, you know, kind of like knowing from that well you're drawing from, maybe you could just elaborate a little more on your individuation process. And how, like, living in a, you know, contemporary society, you know, with, you know, obviously with people who are not as familiar with the legends and folktales, and how you've been able to, you know, bring that, meld that in with your art, along with maybe some other influences, you know, how you created this, how you've been able to create this, you know, amalgamation of sorts, you know?
Right. I'm kind of, I don't know, I feel like I'm kind of in the middle, not too contemporary, not abstract, and not too traditional either. So, I don't know, I just draw what I feel, I guess. And like I said, I love to tell stories through it. So, like for example, I do, and you'll see on the website, if you go to moonhawkart.com, there are some pieces that it's really cool. I went to the Muscogee Creek College and did a talk with their language class, and I was passing around my portfolio, and one of their elders opened up the page to my, it's called Southeast Crossroads. And what it is, it's a black and white, kind of like a collage type of different Southeastern symbols, mound symbols. And She said, "Wow, this is amazing, abstract and contemporary and all of this." And I said, "Funny you say that, because it looks like it's contemporary, but it's done with, I guess, a contemporary style, but it's actually our, ancient mound symbols. So these symbols have been around for I don't even know how long, but these are very ancient. They were found in and around the burial mounds in the southeastern part of the US, whether it's Etowah or Pinson or Moundville, Alabama, or the Spiro Mounds in Oklahoma. I just put them all together into collage work. I love how they flow together. And just, like I said, it gives me a chance to tell the stories of where they came from and, how we're all connected and how, there's so many of these symbols that are also around the world, not just within our tribes. So it just, I don't know. I just love talking to people. I'm a people person. And so anything that opens that door to where I can open my mouth, I guess. That's me. So I don't know. I love it. And I also, there was a piece that I did. So back in, I think it's 2008, my house and my studio burned to the ground and I lost everything. I mean, everything. And I did not do any art for like a year. And one day I was out digging through the rubble, seeing if I could find anything. And I found this little blue molten glass that had melted. And I knew what it was immediately. One of my best friends that I grew up with had given me a bluebird of happiness. And I had kept that, for gosh, 40 years. And I don't know, it just made me start thinking I need to do something symbolizing that happiness, right? So I did a drawing. I think it was Prismacolor watercolor pencils and pen and ink. And it was a bluebird sitting on a fence post, and then another bluebird on the wire. And then it had a mound symbol of a sun symbol up in the sky. And so I named that happiness. Well, go fast forward to 2017, my dad passed away. And not too long after that, we were in Memphis, and a friend of ours, her mother was in the hospital. And I wasn't really good at being in the hospital at that time. So I went out on this walking trail and I was just crying and crying. And a bluebird came down and landed on the sidewalk right in front of me. I mean, right in front of me. It completely, blew my mind. And all I could think was it was my dad telling me, snap out of it, be happy, get back to work, And so, in having that story, there was a woman that came to my booth one day and she saw a print of that piece and she was asking me about it. So I told her that, whole thing that I just told you. And she started crying and she told me what it meant to her and this symbol or similar journey that she had been through and how that it just stood out to her and meant so much to her. So, things like that are what fulfills me. You know what I mean? So whenever I can draw some kind of an emotion from somebody by my art, then that's it.
Birds really do resonate with you. I've heard that on a multi or pan-Indigenous level, bluebirds also represent hope. So, yeah, fitting.
Another bird story I'll tell real quick is whenever I was upstate with my dad one time and we saw some cedar waxwings and I'd never seen one before. And they're just smooth. I don't know if you know what they are, but they look like they're made out of wax, right? So I just was amazed by it. And so that's been one of my dad and my favorite birds. Well, when he was in the hospital his last couple of weeks, I got a new Birds and Bloom magazine and they had a full spread on cedar wax wings. So I had to take it up to the hospital to show my dad. And he said, "You know what this means, right?" And I was like, "No." And he said, "That means you have to paint it." And he said, "Let's do a collaboration." And I was like, "Wait, what?" Because my dad didn't paint, or anything like that. And so he said, "You paint it and I'll name it." And I said, "Okay." And so he named it See Their Wax Wings. And I said, "Okay." And he said, "You want to know why?" And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because when I was a kid, that's what I thought they were saying. Instead of cedar wax wings, I thought they were saying see their wax wings." So that's what I named it. I didn't get it painted until he was gone because I stayed at the hospital with him. So that one was full of, sweat and tears. And I've actually kept the original of that one. So yeah, birds do mean a lot to me.
Yeah, I know it's pulling on that thread. When you look at the gallery on your website, Moonhawk Art, it's interesting how, as many artists do, you give a unique name to the piece of art, which is gives a little more information or gives a little inspires some curiosity, deeper curiosity around the image. For example, I believe there's a this is a coyote or a wolf. We're believing is.
That one's actually my husband's.
Oh yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah,
Not
yeah.
is
But
an image part.
we help support, and this is
Yeah.
another wildlife thing. We help support a wolf rescue in New Mexico, called Wanagi. And the first time that we went out and visited, we met one of her big timber wolves, and John just really was drawn to him, and he was standing there talking to him, and all of a sudden he started howling.
Oh, wow.
And so, I mean, you could just feel it to your bones, So when he passed away, John did that in his honor.
Yeah, and I like this one too. It says, "What you looking at?" With the
Oh,
buffalo.
the buffalo.
Yeah,
Yeah.
what you looking at? That's a nice. It gives a humorous twist to it.
Right. Right.
And all the. Do you have a favorite little subtitle you gave to the art, and how you can pick one that comes to your mind? That you mentioned one, I think, earlier in this thing, but anything come to mind is how it might give a curiosity question or anything another example.
Well, I do. I don't know if you'll want me to talk about it,
Yeah, sure.
there is a contemporary piece, my one abstract piece that I did. It's called One of These Girls Is Not Like the Others.
Okay.
And so what that is from is I was part of a group called Native Body of Art, and they had contacted me and asked if well, first they described what they were doing. So they said, so over however many years in history, native nude art has been done by predominantly European males. And, it was so much of our history and our culture. And so he was wanting to put together a show to where it was predominantly native women artists, but there were some men in it, but it was all native. And he said, you can pick whatever genre you want. You can do, historical empowerment, erotic, whatever you want to do. And I'm like, well, I don't do erotic art, but let me think on that. And the more I thought about it, I thought I want to do this. And I didn't think I'd want to, but the more I thought about it, I did. And so this piece that I'm talking about, I actually did after we were already, the show ended up going on tour. It was supposed to be a one-time thing. And he started getting contacted by different places wanting him to bring it. So one of the places was the University of Illinois. And so we went there and we did an artist talk to where we had, it was like four of us. And I think we had about 40 people that came, and they were asking a lot of questions. And, of course, it got talking about body image and things. And so it made me start thinking about, whenever we moved, when I was in junior high to a predominantly Caucasian or Black school, and being in basketball and then going in the showers, how things all, look different to me. And so I was very self-conscious. And so I never really realized how much that bothered me, I guess, until we started talking about it. And so that's where I had in my mind to do this. One of these girls is not like the others, just like Sesame Street. You know how they put the block up there with all the different things and or all the same things, and you see that one thing that's not the same. So that's why I did this, and I did it in like a geometric. Did you find it on the website? No? Okay. But it's very geometric, and when people look at it, they think, oh, this is really cool, this the colors, all that, and they don't realize what it is until I tell them the story, and then all of a sudden it like jumps out at them exactly what it is. And so they go one of two ways. They either just really love it, you know, or they're really embarrassed and, you know, well, okay. So, but I've had more positive feedback than negative. So, but that one was different for me. And also, I don't know, when you're looking, you'll see the woman where she's like pulling her skin back away from, like, you can see the inside of her. It's white and it's got a lot of tribal motifs inside.
I got to see those in person at one of those convenings where we met. And yeah, it's amazing. And a reclamation of our indigenous bodies.
It's interesting. This website actually features art of both you and your husband.
Yes.
So I keyed out a few pieces that I realize now were your husband's, but I'm sorry. I apologize if I
To pull
was.
him into
Yeah, I
it
wanted to
too.
ask about the Breaking Bad thing because
Yeah.
there's one art there that's like riffs on Breaking Bad, whether or not, to what extent are you commissioned to like comment on pop culture, or like are you asked to, or is that something that just comes wells up in the artist? I don't know. Sorry to I had that private question prepared, and then but yeah, if he's available, you can call him in. Yeah.
John, you want to come and get in on this?
It'd be great to ask a question about that, because that really caught my eye. I was like, oh, you know, what kind of new perspective is bringing in that, you know?
Who wants to ask about the Breaking Bad piece?
Oh, good.
Yeah,
Yes, hello.
we were discussing that and discussing how, you know, for Indigenous artists, you know, how like, you know, commenting on pop culture, how does that make you feel, and how did what did you enjoy the show, and how did you bring a new perspective into it? Yeah.
Yeah, that was something I've had in my mind since I was a child is the native humor part of native culture. You know, that's a it's I don't say it's unique, but it's unique if you experience it on the inside. People don't think of natives as having a sense of humor,
They think
being
I'm as being a stoic.
hilariously funny, you know, and so that was one. I've had several ideas like that since I was a kid. My relatives were funny, you know, they were clowning around. My daddy, you know, he's really a clown. So I wound up one too. And but I liked it, but I'm not funny, unfortunately. So where I put my humor in is in the artwork and my
Yeah, a
drawing.
lot of pop culture started to integrate in, like Reservation Dogs recently came out. I watched a few episodes, but I've been to catch up on it. And then Echo from Marvel Cinematic Universe features indigenous characters. So do you feel like representation has improved, or for both of you, do you feel like representation improved, or do you feel like you would like more more indigenous artists actually, you know, getting out there and giving their perspective? Or do you feel like, what do you think?
I personally, I mean, I enjoy all the native shows that have been out. I don't know. It kind of seems though a lot of them show natives coming from such poor conditions, and you know it's not always like that. So I hate for people to think. Well, I mean, we weren't
So I was just
poor.
kidding.
Not like what they're talking about, but
No.
you know, not everybody's like that. I mean, we've got a lot of friends that are, you know, very prestigious and,
Oh,
you know, from.
yeah, that's true. You know, whenever I was worked at Macomb College for 18 years, and I worked in the native section. You'd think that would have been the whole college would have been the native section, but it wasn't. There was, you know, it kind of got to a point where it, you know, And so, yeah, even the, you know, all my friends were PhDs or, you know, had master's degrees and things like that, and were funny as all get out, very, you know, humorous. The one thing about, I don't know if this is in line with it, but I'll tell you something that I haven't talked about hardly at all, but I'll talk about it here. Is one time we did a show and I won first place on two, I think I won two first place ribbons on one, but one was, this was at the Chickasaw Nation show. They have two, this is one of them. But I made this drum, I made a hand drum, and I was, it wasn't just a drum, I was using it as a representation of something, but my, and it was on the Native humor, but I painted Colonel Sanders, you know, the old Colonel Sanders, just like, you know, not the new Colonel Sanders, the old Colonel Sanders that was on the box, you know, and I put him in the center, and I used some of the red and white stripes, and then I put chickens, you know, four chickens running in a counterclockwise, or no, they were, yeah, they were running clockwise, but anyway, it was hilarious to look at, but somebody posted that online, and like I say, this is before. This is before Reservation Dogs came out. You know, this is before then, and just by a couple of years, maybe. But it was hilarious. I had some people tell me, but some people that
But it
weren't,
had a meaning too.
they had a meaning. But you know, it was primarily Native humor. You know, you just look, if you're Native, you'd see it and you'd laugh. You'd get it. You'd get it immediately. You know, we all have a KFC experience. You know,
Yeah,
so it's.
I wanted to ask you about gender identification and how much the masculine kind of, I feel like a lot of times masculinity has this kind of sense of humor with the Magnificent Seven is one of the paintings. Was that yours as well? Or I don't know.
That's mine.
It's yours. Oh, great. It's interesting. That's really interesting then that, you know, we think about the gunslingers and all this kind of thing. And I think of that as a little bit a masculine energy. So that really subverts, that really answers my question, really, you know, about how you interplay this yin yang kind of energy, in addition to your working with being you know, aware of your own identity, intersectionality, and how you're able to bring in and work together and collaborate to like to bring in each other's energy, maybe as artists. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how your collaborations and how you two work together as artists, you know, and this kind of thing, gender identity kind of stuff. Yeah.
I'm gonna finish my drum story real quick, and then I'll get
Yeah.
to.
Sure. Sorry.
Yeah. It was just about that at that time, whenever that came out, another artist posted that, and it got a lot of from his group, not from my group. If I'd have posted on mine, it would have been something else. And he got a lot of there was a lot of people saying, "Oh, that's terrible. That's a terrible thing. Oh,
Offensive.
wait till he's real and didn't see it and see what they say." You know, but I guarantee they laughed at it. They thought it was hilarious. And so I've wondered that since Reservation Dogs come out, I wonder if they get it now. You know, these people get that it's, you know, it's we're about having a good time and being funny. You know, we take our stuff seriously when it's serious, but you know, in between time, we like to have fun and laugh, and you know, it helps us. You know, but to your let's that sounds like a question more in your line, but I'll see if I can what he was just talking about on the gender.
No, it was, what was your last question?
On the collaboration and the dynamic, like how you guys work together and as artists, and like and how you're able to also the inspiration around making this, because I kind of assumed that was a very masculine energy. So it's interesting, like very like Western, old Western kind of
Right.
like
The
guys like
Magnificent
to
Seven.
watch. So like that's why it's interesting to bring in that element as your own work and tell us a little bit about your process with that and all this kind of thing. If you do,
Want
you
to go, you
know,
can go.
no, go ahead, it's your piece.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, on that one specifically, I mean, I grew up watching old Westerns. That was my thing. Clint Eastwood's my guy, you know.
Yeah.
So I was a tomboy too. So. But anyway, but in the collaboration part, John is such an important support for me. We might not have actually done a collaborative piece together, but yet all of them are. So it's like right now I'm finishing up on illustrating a children's book, and all, you know, like this bear that I'm doing, I could not get it right, you know. So the first thing I'll do, take a picture of it, send it to John. Okay, look at this. What am I doing? What's going on? You know, and he'll help me figure it out. We'll, you know, we'll work it out and figure it out. And he'll, because he, that's a fresh, look at it. And, and he's done the same with me too, but I do it more with him. He helps me quite a bit on seeing things straight, because I don't know, I get flustered so easily with it. And
As we all do, obviously,
yeah.
but it is.
So,
Need
but
somebody to help
that's.
clear out the. And when you look at a painting so much, and of course you're your own worst critic, and gosh, I am too. So everybody is.
Yeah.
Pretty anything seems so. But yeah,
Yeah.
especially artwork. She has a lot of positive energy though that carries her through. She has a lot of positive energy. Of course, I grew up kind of artist that. Always questions what he's doing. I mean, and it's so much that I wind up not doing anything. So that's my artist problem. That's an artist way. Artists do that. And that's a problem that we have or
I think we
that.
get that imposter syndrome,
Yeah, the imposter syndrome.
It's so interesting. I just want to call attention because not everyone can see the visual that you have that little hat, the hat on that mirrors the frying bread,
Oh, yeah. That's just
so it's like you're, it
coincidental.
really is your own, your each of your individual styles that is brought into the pieces as well as like, the Breaking Bad comment of frying bread is used instead of Breaking Bad, just for the audience to know. They should check it out at moonhawkart.com. And also like how your individual styles, your individual personalities are obviously being incorporated into your art. Just want to tell that to the audience so they acknowledge that, as you're saying about humor and we're all individuals at the end of the day. We're all human beings.
True.
So yeah.
I like that. Yeah, we're
Have you
individuals. Yeah.
considered doing a more like official collaboration or talked about it?
Yeah, we've talked about it. It's just getting us both in the same place at the same time, because before COVID, we were traveling all the time, doing art shows. And when we were home, we were filling wholesale orders and then gearing up for the next show. So between April and to the end of December, we were gone all the time. And then, of course, COVID hit and shut down all of our show venues, shut down all of our wholesale places. And so, it forced us to stay home. And that's when I started illustrating books. And it actually worked out for us in a whole different way than we would have imagined. We have our Etsy shop that's connected to our website, and that started picking up. So, we had money coming in doing the website and then doing the book illustrations and then also teaching online. And John's parents started needing more help taking care of them. And so it's one of those things back and forth, so John's actually here helping his parents. I'm at home doing the business and illustrating, and then my mom has actually moved in with me and my son and his girlfriend are home too. So it's just a crazy life right now, but it's just like a whole different dynamic than what we had before. So at some point, yes, I hope that we can get together and do a massive project together.
Very true. Me?
I'll pause here 1 second to quickly say this is Radio Free Brooklyn. Radio Free Brooklyn is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we're obviously funded by the generous listeners like you and independent artists such as Mary Beth and John Timothy are trying to, encourage you to go to the shops, going to moonhawkart.com. And these kinds of conversations are helped by community radio such as Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm here with my co-host Dom Bijar Nathan. I'm here with my co-host Dr. Jessica Dometha. We have a conversation around art and visual art and all the different aspects of being an artist. One more quick thing. I think there's a new Colossus thing I had to read. That's right. Here it is. Come celebrate independent music. Meanwhile, community is at the fifth annual New Colossus Festival, a 5-day showcase festival taking place March 6th through the 10th at 8 independent music venues in the Lower East Side in New York City. This year's festival will feature over 130 emerging artists from all around the world, as well as Ditto X, NYC 24, music conference and networking event. Be sure to swing by Arlene's Grocery on Wednesday, March 6th, for New Colossus Festival Welcome Party, presented by yours truly, Rader from Brooklyn. Information can be found at newcolossusfestival.com. Okay,
That's
great.
crazy. I don't know
So,
which we could go.
we have a few more minutes, but I just want to quickly get some announcements out of the way
Sure, sure.
before we go. So now, yeah, so then tell us a little bit about, you were telling us a little bit about your, so many things are going on. It's really great as artists. What about on the consumer end, like as far as the influences on you and in your community, if you want to highlight some of the different artists that different art that influenced you or that you consume, because we mentioned a little bit about pop culture, so it sounds like you might be a consumer as well of like different art or different support of your community and all this kind of thing. You know what I'm saying, influences, contemporary influences among your community that you like to
Native artists,
sure,
sure,
but yeah.
very.
Yeah.
Gosh, there's quite a
Yeah,
few
there's
of
quite a
them.
few. Roy Boney does some.
Yeah.
We just talked about him a minute ago.
Tom
Tom
Ferris.
Ferris. Tom Ferris is a really good one. Let's see now. If I
Gosh, there's
think
so
going
many.
back, there's
Oh,
some
you just
good.
speak on the importance of community, on the importance of community and how it's helped you in any way. You don't have to necessarily give shout outs, but you can just say in general, like how community has helped you. And you're living in Oklahoma, right? So you can talk a little bit about how that community, has supported you.
Okay, me. I work with the Cherokee Nation a lot, and we also try to. We used to, before COVID, do a lot of local events and donate to. We still try to donate where we can and help them out. Going and helping, even like I just judged a student art show at the Five Civilized Tribes Museum, and we just try to stay involved where we can. We're pretty busy, so it's kind of hard, but in helping out others as we've been helped is important to us. And so yeah, any way that we can give back, and that's one of the reasons why I'm teaching. I mean, yes, I get paid for it and everything, but I teach through a Native nonprofit out of California called IDRS, Indian Dispute Resolution Services. So they do a lot of, or also do a lot of entrepreneurship type trainings. And so my class is teaching Native artists and crafters how to start an online Etsy store. We were, before COVID, actually going out to Nevada, Oregon, and California and teaching in these rural Native communities, which we had no idea there were so many of them out there, and they don't have access to all of the different resources that we do, whether it be, gift shops or art shows or even powwows, or, they might be a single mom with kids or elderly and or handicap or whatever, but they're stuck at home or don't have a car. We try to give them those tools to where they can have some kind of income coming in. And so that is very empowering to me to be able to do that. And now that we're doing it online, it opens it up to where it, there's more people that we can reach. And it's just, it warms my heart. And sometimes I've even, it's been hard to hold back tears telling everybody how proud I am of them and how, it's just such a blessing to me to be able to help them to succeed, in their businesses and to get out there and to see these people wanting to do it, and trying to do it. Because I know, if I was in these same situations, I may not even try to do something like that. So I think it's fantastic that these people are willing to put themselves out there and do that.
My part of community, that was great. When we went to California, that was just wonderful. That was working with Native, people, helping encouragement. But, one thing that I've done, before Mary Beth and I got together, whenever I began working at Five Tribes Museum as well, that was back in the 90s. But from the 90s till 2018, I was in the museum, a culture, a business of some sort. But going to schools was really important, especially around here. And it would go like this. They would have a powwow, at November, Native Heritage Month, would have a powwow or something at the local schools, and it would have all this entertainment. And there would be some posters here and there. But I would, when it would come my turn to talk, I'd play the flute or something, but then I would talk to you and I'd say, how have y'all enjoyed this powwow today? Yeah, all the kids, yay. And y'all learn a lot today? Yeah, we did. I said, okay, well, can y'all tell me, answer me a question? What does the word Oklahoma mean? Zip. Nobody knew anything about that. And so and I thought, and so I said, well, let's start there. So that's where you got to start. Hey, you know who the chief is? Who the chief, what tribal nation is this school in? Most people didn't know, had no idea what tribal nation their school was setting in, but resided in. And so, they'd guess, kids would guess. And I always wanted to ask the kids because that would tell me if they were taught that or not, And so, but yeah, that would go from grade school to high school, on up into college, into the adults, that I would ask these questions. And it was really simple questions, but it was shocking how little was known about that.
Especially in
Yeah,
Oklahoma.
well, I just got through taking my dad to a doctor appointment, and he had his hat on. He had a good black hat on, ready for stomp grounds. And this lady asked him, she wasn't a native woman. She said, "Oh, are you going to?" She worked there. Said, "Are you going to your dances and did this number?" And I said, "No, we don't do that." And she said, "Well, I remember when I was in. I remember when some little Indian kids came to our school one time. They were dancing and doing that. It was so cute." And I said, "No, we don't do that." And
Oh my
she
gosh.
kept trying to tell how cute it was. And I said, "I don't think that was. Yeah, it might have been cute, but it was
Wow.
that wasn't a good thing, And but our conversation, it didn't end there. We talked pleasantries after that, but I was about to get on my horse, and
Yeah.
so but
But one of the things that bothers me is, and that's a whole different thing. But say, like on Facebook, whenever, you have native groups on Facebook, right? And then somebody gets into the group and they weren't raised around it. They know nothing about it. They're wanting to learn, and immediately they're attacked, and I don't know. To me, and maybe it's because I wasn't, immersed in it. But it's like, I think you should educate and not humiliate. I think that's really important.
that's really big in the language too, especially at Creek Nation. Cherokee Nation, they seem to be really, and there are some people that really are good about teaching the Muscogee language, but a lot of the old timers will make fun of you. I
If
think
you're
it's
just trying
common.
to
If you
learn,
try to
yeah.
learn, they'll pick at you. Like my dad, he really loves speaking Creek, but it's more to pester you,
He's
but
an instigator.
he's an instigator, and he uses the Muscogee language.
We better let
Yeah.
him.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I can say just to briefly that when you grow up with these stories and legends and culture, it's different than when you're learning it at an adult age. Like I took a few seminars in Kabbalah as a senior in college, and I wasn't steeped in the kind of Jewish tradition as they went the other people in class. Or like for example, like with and then when I see people who are beginning to get introduced to yoga late in life, sometimes they may dive into the Yoga Sutras very quickly, or sometimes they may, stall out, and then they'll say instead of Sanatana Dharma, say Santana Dharma, which I'm like, oh, it's a very different Santana as the band, and so it's very easy to like be glib about that, but of course, if you've not grown up with it, then it's very different. I'd be sympathetic and be understanding that these are easy slips and mistakes that, like you're saying, like it's easy to be snarky, it's easy to be too cool for school. Whereas it's better to be a learner and an educator and to just share that, some people have grown up with this and some people are, just learning. But I want you to bring up how rabbits tricked the buzzards. I don't think we mentioned that, right? You put that in the Facebook. So if you can mention a little bit about that, it was just 4 days ago, this collaboration, Trisha Lumbee story, which Mary Beth illustrated. That might be a good talking point as we start to close. Yeah.
So I'm still working on it, actually. I'm
Yeah.
finishing up on it. And that's the one I was telling you I was working on last night and had to call Don.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
like, I'm having trouble with this. But yeah, it's my first full color children's book project. So I'm super excited about getting that done. And as soon as I'm done with that one, I'm under contract with HarperCollins Children's Book to start another full color children's book. See, the first one was written by Arvis Bowman, and then the next one will be by Kim Rogers. And let's see, what else was there? Oh, and I've got the sketches turned in to for the next one as well. So it's just getting it done. And then I'm also working on a Cherokee Educational plush toy collection, my first one. So it's about to be released as soon as we get the tags done. And this summer, nobody knows this except my friends. So this summer, I'm writing and illustrating my own first book. So I'm super excited about it.
Congratulations. What I mean, you don't have to go
Children's.
into it.
It's
Children's book.
it'll be a picture book.
Congratulations, that's great.
Thank you. I
My
won a
kids have too many
scholarship.
books and too many stuffed animals, but I will still get yours.
Thank you. So I won a scholarship with the Highlights Foundation. And one of the workshops that I want to take for sure is writing the children's book. So they're supposed to go through it from the beginning to end. So I'm super anxious about it. So yeah. Yay.
Go ahead, Jessica. It's something or oh no. Okay. So congratulations again. That's really great. And like as you move forward, what like that kind of continues my next question about moving forward and what you envision. Not even like an immediate project, but things your wish list of things that you would like to manifest or see manifested either in your life or in the Indigenous community in general. You know, what kind of end results would you like to see happen? Or what you know, what plot points would you like us to hit? Like, you know, as far as, yeah, go ahead.
I know what I'm hoping for, what I'm trying to put out into the universe for myself. Well, I told John the last art show that we went to, I said, you know, right now at this time in my life, I don't feel like this is what I need to be doing. I mean, as much as I love doing art shows, we've got some physical issues right now. Plus, you know, he's taking care of his parents and I'm trying to run the business, you know, so and illustrating books, deadlines. So just a lot going on, but I don't know. I just don't feel like that's where I'm supposed to be. And I feel like right now it's illustrating. And I love doing the surface pattern design as well. And so I'd love to have a chance to do more of that. But I think the illustrating, because you know, like I said, I love telling stories through my art. And so it's like they write the story and then I tell the story. So it's, I don't know, I love that. I love being able to do that. So yeah, my next thing that my next goal is to win the Caldecott. I would love
Easy, easy.
that. No problem. I think no, I do definitely encourage you to that's a great ambition. I think that's great.
I think the
John
marriage
had
of
to go help his mom, so Yeah. We only
I
have
was gonna say,
about 5 minutes, so yeah, 4 more minutes.
marriage of like the visual and the text, like with your illustrated books, I feel is just so reflective of like oral storytelling tradition too.
And what I love too is in, you know, and every publisher and art director is different, right? But I love it when they say, okay, I want you to read it and I want you to run with it. You know, I want to see it in your, you know, how you envision it. And, you know, instead of saying, okay, we want this and this and this, and we want it this way and this way and this way, which I understand that, you know, but it's always awesome whenever you hear that and they just trust you with it and you can just run with it and do what you envision. So I'll
Yeah,
do that with my own
the
book.
creative freedom, it must be special. Yeah,
Right.
creative freedom. Yeah. All right, great. So let's do some closing thoughts as we start to wind down just to close up. Any last words? So Jessica, you want any last words, and then I'll close this out. Okay.
Last word is Watto.
Widow.
That's a leave for thank you.
Oh, okay.
WADU.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. Okay, thanks. And Mary Beth,
Yeah.
any last words or last comments?
Well, my comment is, no matter how old you are, if you are a creative thinker, don't be afraid to step outside the box and do what you want to do what you love to do. It
Thank
took me a while to get there, but I'm finally doing it. Love it.
you. And finally, I just want to tell listeners that I'll be doing a thank you so much for being here. I just told us I'll be doing a Monsoon Warrior storytelling show at the end of March, at Easter actually, that I'll be doing both on Zoom as well as a live person in Brooklyn, where I'll be kind of integrating in my own cultural heritage with my manifestation work and current living arrangement, kind of career work. Career vocational work. So very much resonating with what you're saying about kind of bringing your identity, bringing your heritage, bringing in your art, and how it all kind of inform the creative process, which I think is very important. So people can check that out at monsoonwarrior.eventbrite.com or vjrnathan.com. And once again, and if you want to direct anyone to your own websites, we mentioned Blue Collar Guard, but also you have a Facebook page and a and Instagram, I think we're all linked in that.
Yeah, and they're all, everything is Moonhawk Art. MoonHawkArt.
Thank you. All right, guys. Thanks so much. Another great edition of the Truth to Power Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. Thank you so much.
Thank you.